You saw a PowerPoint presentation yesterday from Brother Glendon. Done an excellent job on the previous chapter that we're going to be studying today. I don't have anything quite as fancy, but hopefully there's a little bit of information here that we can find to discuss in these verses. As we continue our study in the book of Daniel, we're reminded that Daniel instructed Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2, verse 28, that there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Daniel was the only one to correctly provide the explanation of the dream of Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel further reminds the king in 27th verse of that same chapter that the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. And the king confirms that the God of Daniel is one who hath revealed the things of the dream, as we see in 47 of chapter 2. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret to me. The king was very well convinced that Daniel was indeed the one with what the king might have seen as a special connection with the Creator, because no one else in Babylon could explain the king's dream. This special connection had put Daniel into a unique position of ruler over all the province and allowed him to sit in the gate of the king. Daniel chapter 3 is an inspiring record of men who chose the narrow way and who were prepared to follow it wherever it led. Men who went forward from strength to strength, building for the future with purpose and determination upon a firm basis of light and reality. Nebuchadnezzar, the personification of human pride and power, sets up an image of gold that all are commanded to worship. All through history, it has been the same image in various forms, and it is the same today. As we begin chapter 3, it is evident that Nebuchadnezzar put the dream into action and made an image of gold. No timetable is mentioned in the construction of this image, but it was likely soon after the interpretation of the dream. As written in the first verse, the image of gold would have been easily recognized at the height of 60 cubits, some 90 to maybe over 100 feet, and 6 cubits wide, or about 10 feet in diameter. This is symbolic of the image of man. 6 is the number of man, and the measure of his dominion on earth. Even though Nebuchadnezzar was told by Daniel there would be an inferior kingdom after him, the king attempts to defeat divine intervention by constructing a giant golden image. This was representative of Babylon in his dream. As we continue in verses 2 and 3, mentions the variety of officials that were called to the dedication of the pagan image. Babylon was extremely wealthy and organized, as indicated by all the managing positions that were listed, not unlike many modern-day governments in the world and the papacy as well. This dedication was no doubt a tremendous undertaking with a high level of importance. Notice it was the king that has set up the image. The God of Daniel did not command that an image be constructed for worship. The mind of the flesh was in full bloom concerning Nebuchadnezzar's thoughts and actions. The command was given by King Nebuchadnezzar in verses 4 and 5. Then an herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. Again, we see that the number of musical instruments used were 6, and that is the number of the flesh. The music of Babylon is designed to gratify the flesh. The constant repetition of the musical instruments, as seen in verses 5, 7, 10, and 15, emphasizes the importance that was attached to this form of service. It was emotional, religion stimulated by rousing music. As the command was set forth to worship the image when they heard the music, the falling down was an act of complete submission to the fleshly image. This complete submission was to be commenced within the hour that the music was heard, or the consequences were a fiery death. The Babylonians worshiped fire. To them, a fiery death was utter destruction, burned into ashes. As Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego maintained their faith unto Yahweh and refused to bow to the image, we are told that certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. This would likely have been a welcomed opportunity for the Chaldeans to seek a means of bringing the downfall of the three Israelites that were elevated to positions of eminence above them. Daniel himself does not appear at this crisis when his three companions were cast into the fiery furnace. Apparently he was elsewhere, but 70 years further he has his own trial in the pit of lions, which we'll hear about more later this week. The matter of the three Israelites disobeying the king's command was brought forth to Nebuchadnezzar, and he questioned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego if it were true. All knowing what the consequences were for not obeying the commandment, certain death in the burning fiery furnace. They refused to submit to the king's law. Worship of the golden image was virtually an acknowledgement that the dynasty of Nebuchadnezzar should continue through the ages. To refuse to submit to this implied the attitude of a traitor towards the king and his realm. It is likely that Nebuchadnezzar feared the defiant Jews, knowing that God was with them, and recognizing that if they successfully defied his law, the prophecy of the dream image must prevail. In verse 14, the margin renders, "Is it on purpose?" Such a rendition is supported by Jacinius. The king wanted to know if their action was an oversight or deliberate. He gave them an opportunity to retract and excuse themselves from the mistake. After all, he honored their God, so they should honor his. In verse 15, he gave them another opportunity to reconsider. Nebuchadnezzar could not understand how a God could deliver the three Jews out of his hands. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were totally committed in their faith, just like David was against Goliath and so many others throughout Scripture. The three realized there would be other kingdoms to rule after Babylon. All of the kingdoms were hanging on to the pagan godheads. The truth was always there and solid as a rock. In Daniel 3, verse 19, it says, "Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1/7 times more than it was wont to be heated." King Nebuchadnezzar had immediately changed his visage. In Strong's, that word says anaph, which probably meant his nose or nostrils flaring, rapid breathing, in anger. In Nebuchadnezzar's mind, he would not be made a fool. He commanded that they heat the furnace to a level that would destroy anyone. Why heat the furnace to such intensity? Because Nebuchadnezzar had received such evidence of the power of the God of the Hebrews that he is somewhat not sure of this outcome. By heating the fire, he increased the power of the God of fire in his mind, that even the Hebrews' God could not save anyone that was thrust into the furnace. Three Jews were bound and cast into the midst of the fiery furnace, completely clothed. The word coats is sarvelen, which signifies to cover. In fact, the way they were dressed, in large loose trousers, tunics, and enveloping mantles, were similar to Babylonian clothing. This normally would have made them vulnerable to fire. But there is a more significant feature, a type. All true saints are clothed. They have to put on Christ, as mentioned in Galatians 3:27, and seek to keep their garments unspotted from the world, as in James 1:27. Figuratively, they were clothed with Christ, and Christ protected them from the fiery trial in which they were placed. The king could not believe his eyes. The three were not harmed, and yet a fourth one with them that appeared like the Son of God. Nebuchadnezzar the fourth was like an angelic form, which in the future, the antitypical Nebuchadnezzar, the ruler of Babylon the Great, will see one like unto the Son of Elohim in the company of the glorified elect. Once again, the king finds himself in a position to acknowledge the supremacy of the Most High God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. As we'll see in chapter 4, it says, "The Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men." In chapter 3, verse 27, it says, "These men upon whose bodies the fire had no power." The roller coaster moods of the pagan rulers concerning Yahweh's chosen people indicate that the flesh is always active. As we remember Pharaoh's reaction to the miracles performed through Moses, Pharaoh was always changing his mind whether or not to let God's chosen people leave Egypt. Nebuchadnezzar will soon learn a lesson of the ultimate power from the God of Daniel. If we look back to Luke 21, there was a verse from the Mount Olivet prophecy that says, "There shall not an hair of your head perish." This is likewise connected to our study in this chapter of Daniel. When walking in the mind of the Spirit, we are covered with Christ and completely protected from the trials of fire. This may pose the question, are we prepared to be tried with fires of the furnace? Is our faith strong enough to carry us through the toughest times in our walk towards Zion? King Nebuchadnezzar was having to humble himself before the entire assembly after witnessing the miraculous outcome of the three Hebrews. The king's word was now changed. He made a decree that every people, nation, and language that speaks against the God of the Hebrews shall be cut in pieces, and their homes shall be made a dunghill. Punishment that Nebuchadnezzar threatened those who blaspheme was common to those times. Ancient inscriptions depict captives being drawn and quartered. Christ used similar terms in describing the condemnation that shall be meted out to those rejected at the judgment, although not being cut in two. But having broken the covenant, the fate of the covenant victim will become theirs in that they will be rejected. In the last verse of the chapter, it shows the promotion of the fearless and faithful Israelites to be a witness for any who, willing to make themselves a sacrifice to Yahweh, will never lack a reward.